Once again, we'd like to turn to Matthew 14. Tonight we'll read verses 22 through verse 33. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. When he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. When the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit." And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water." And he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. Beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. And they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, "Of a truth, thou art the Son of God." Again, we saw this morning that there's basically four main events in this chapter, and this would be the third. Within these events are many other events, which we saw this morning. The events that are recorded are remarkably instructional, relational to our lives. We want to take the message, we wanted to, our thought anyway. There's a very ordinary statement made in verse 22. Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go unto the other side. Very ordinary statement. And then in verse 33, there's an extraordinary statement. And they that were in the ship came and worshipped him. So we see an ordinary statement. We see an extraordinary statement. The extraordinary, an ordinary statement, extraordinary event. It took place in an ordinary boat. So in those two verses, verse 22 and 33, we see both the ordinary, nothing special about verse 22, people got into a boat. And then we see the extraordinary in verse 33. The subject, this is an impressive title, by the way, Experiencing the Extraordinary So That We Can Live Extraordinarily in the Ordinary. I came up with that myself. It's a long title. Verse 22, the disciples get into a ship. Very normal occurrence. Something very common. Nothing remarkable about verse 22, very nondescript, very commonplace, and much of our life is lived in the realm of the normal, the common, the unremarkable. But then in verse 33, they that were in the ship, an ordinary place, came and worshipped him. That's an extraordinary act. That's something beyond the ordinary. But it took place in the ordinary, in an ordinary place, in a ship. Again, they that were in the ship, common and ordinary place, came and worshiped him. In an ordinary place, they did something very unique. In an ordinary place, they did something very noteworthy. It's not an ordinary event for men and women to worship God. That's not an ordinary event. Wish it was, but it isn't. Now, much happens between verse 22 and verse 33. Much happens here between the ordinary and the extraordinary in the ordinary place. Again, what we read here is the third major event of the chapter. Disciples are caught in an inescapable, life-threatening storm. Verse 25 comes a major transition point in that storm. We see that Jesus went unto them. That's a transition point in this storm. The manner in which Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. That, of course, is extraordinary. But this is the transition point in this storm. Jesus went unto them. The great emancipator. The one and only way to God. The one and only door into the blessings of God. The bread and the water of life. The great I Am. Their shepherd, their friend, the rock, the hope of God's people, the greatest of all, the one who is above all, superior to all, the one who is beyond all, is walking toward them. That will change everything in this storm. Again, it is the transition point in the event. The result that this had upon the disciples is recorded in verse 26. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they didn't recognize him because it says they were troubled. And they were making a supposition. It is a spirit. And the result of their supposition was fear. They already had fear. Now they have more fear. They cried out in fear. That, of course, would all lead, that would lead to Jesus' response in verse 27. Be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. Again, a transition point. And that would lead to the next sequence in the event, which is recorded in verses 28 and 29. Peter, walking on the storm-tossed waters. An extraordinary personal experience. Imagine, again, as we've said many times, we don't know how far out Jesus was. He may have been from here to that pew. He may have been from here to across the street. We don't know. We don't know how long Peter walked on the water. Maybe 5 feet. Maybe 100 yards. We don't know. But what a feeling. Peter must have had walking on that water. He'd never done it before. It was an extraordinary personal experience. In verse 30, there is a break or an interruption in that sequence. Notice verse 29. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. What a way to end the verse. But it doesn't end there. Verse 30, but. There's a problem. But. This is where the interruption comes in. But. And then what is recorded after that is the actual interruption. What was it that interrupted this extraordinary personal experience of Peter? But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. It's not that the water became boisterous. The storm was going on when Peter stepped out of the boat. But he saw. And it's not that he didn't see it before. But he saw the wind boisterous and he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried saying, Lord, save me. And then verse 31, and continues. Jesus, with his outstretched arm, takes hold of Peter. And they together walk back to the boat. Which brings us to verse 33. They that were in the ship came and worshipped him in an ordinary boat. And now they're doing the extraordinary. Again, there's much in our life that is ordinary. Get up in the morning. We do whatever it is we do. Very, very ordinary. Much in life is in the ordinary. So let us consider, first of all, very, very briefly, the experience of the extraordinary. And then, secondly, we want to consider the how to experience the spiritually extraordinary and how to carry that into the ordinary. But first of all, just consider the experience of the extraordinary. Peter, walking on water. That's quite a picture in my mind. A man walking on water. And as you read the account, we can imagine things that were happening. The thunder booms. Someone say, well, maybe it wasn't thundering. Maybe it wasn't. I'm telling you what's in my mind. The lightning cracks. The wind whips up the waves. The waves are pounding the boat. In verse 29, Peter stepped out of the boat. That's remarkable. That is a huge step of faith. He didn't wait for the waters to calm down. Jesus said, come. And Peter stepped out of the boat. And I can only imagine what the others in the boat were saying to Peter. And then we see he walked on water. You might expect to read, he began to frantically splash in the water. But that's not what happened. He walked on the water. You might expect to read, Peter stepped out of the boat and began to swim. But that's not what it says. You might expect to read, and Peter stepped out of the boat and began to tread water. Those would all be the ordinary thing. But it says he walked on the water. He He stepped out of that boat based on the words of Jesus Christ, come. And based upon the fact that he now believed, I believe when Peter heard Jesus say, it is I, Peter said to himself, I've heard that voice before. I know who that is. I know who that is. Lord, if it's you, bid me to come. And the Lord, come. Now, you notice there in verse 29, and he said, come, period. I don't know how much time transpired between that period and then and when Peter was come down the boat. I don't think it was long at all. I don't think it was several hours. But I believe Peter heard that word, come. He believed. And his faith caused him to step on the water. What was Peter expecting when he stepped on the water? I don't think he was expecting to walk on it. But he did. He's walking on the water. That is an extraordinary personal experience. That is not something you're going to forget. That's something that's going to make an impact in your life. What's he doing? He's walking on water. He's doing what man cannot do. Man cannot walk on water. And Peter is doing what man cannot do. He walked on the water. He's doing the impossible. That is extraordinary. That is an extraordinary personal experience. He has entered into the realm of the supernatural. Jesus walked on the water. You and I can understand that. Yes, Jesus can do that. He's God. But Peter walked on the water. He's entered in an entirely different realm. Peter walking on that water is in a completely different realm than the one sitting on the boat. And I'm not criticizing the one sitting on the boat. I'm just stating the fact that he's in a completely different spiritual realm than these others. And any time we enter a different spiritual realm, that's extraordinary. We ought to strive for that every single day. He walked on the water. What's he doing? Is he not doing what Jesus is doing? Jesus is walking on the water. Peter is walking on the water. He's doing the very same thing that Jesus Christ is doing. Is that not what our life is to be? Our life is to be Christ-likeness. That's where Peter is here. That's extraordinary. When we're like Christ, that is an extraordinary experience. That is not the ordinary. It is not the ordinary for you and I to be like Christ. That's the extraordinary. The question is, do we desire an extraordinary experience? I'm talking spiritually. Do we desire that? We ought to every day. Do we desire to do what we cannot do? I can't walk on water. You can't walk on water. But do we desire to do so? Do we desire to do what is humanly impossible to us to do? Christ says, be like me. That's impossible. I can't do that in myself. But it can be done. Do we desire to do what we cannot do in ourselves? Do we desire to do what is impossible to man? Do we desire to walk like Christ? All of those things are extraordinary. And we ought to desire the extraordinary. Yes, we live to a large degree in the ordinary. But our life as a child of God should be everything, anything but ordinary. Our lives ought to be extraordinary. In the ordinary. So that brings us to how do we experience the spiritually extraordinary? And then how do we carry that experience back into the boat or back into the ordinary. Before we look at that, we must say that we realize we can just be going along and just, and the Lord can just intervene and all of a sudden we're in the extraordinary. We realize that. But that's not our point. We realize that can happen. We realize that does happen. But I believe we can see here there are some steps outside of Jesus just intervening in our lives and putting us in the extraordinary. There's some steps to experiencing the spiritually extraordinary. I believe that we can experience it every day. I believe that. I believe we can experience it every single day. It shouldn't be a rarity in our lives. And that we can carry it into our ordinary life. Number one, we must get past supposition. Remember, Jesus came walking toward them, walking on the water. Their conclusion was, it is a spirit. It is a ghost. He came in the fourth night of the watch, between 3 and 6 in the morning. Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. He came in His supremacy. He came in His dominion, walking on the storm-tossed waters. And they're frightened. It is spirit. Mark records the same thing in Mark 6, verse 49. So what was the problem here? Number one, they failed to recognize Christ. He was coming toward them, and they did not recognize Him. That's always a problem. When we do not recognize Jesus Christ. They did not have clear perception of Jesus Christ. So they did not recognize Him. They did not have clear perception of Him. So what do? They know something's out there. And it's moving toward them. So what do? They fill in the blanks. They fill in the blanks. It's a spirit. And they all seem to agree. It's a ghost. And this only added to their confusion. Supposition will do that. It only added to their agitation. It only added to their anxiety. It did not decrease their anxiety. It did not decrease their anxiety in believing that's a ghost. That increased their anxiety. That increased the distress in their hearts. And any time our confusion and our agitation and our anxiety is increased, we perhaps better stop. Maybe I'm not seeing things clearly here. And that was the case. They were not seeing Jesus clearly. And their supposition only worsened their situation. Man by nature is an expert at creating events in their minds, terrible events, tragic events, and then becoming anxious because of what they've created in their mind. We're experts at that. We all do it. Some do it. Some are much better at it than others. But we all do it. So if we're going to experience the extraordinary, if Peter never got past verse 26, it is spirit. He would have never walked on water. He had to get past that. He had to get past, I think. He had to get past that. And if you and I are going to experience the spiritually extraordinary, we have got to get past our suppositions. If you don't, You'll never get out of the boat. You'll stay there the rest of your life. Secondly, we have to get past the carnal mindset. This kind of just goes with the other. What we read in verse 26, it is a spirit. Do you think that the ones in that boat were thinking, I believe Jesus is going to come any minute and rescue us? No, I don't think that was their mindset at all. Their mindset in this fierce storm, this life-threatening storm, they're not looking for the miraculous. That's not what they're looking for. I believe they were expecting to drown. They were expecting their own demise. And that's why immediately they jumped to the worst possible conclusion. It is a spirit. If we're going to get to verse 30 or verse 29, Peter walking on the water, you got to get past verse 26. Verse 29 doesn't happen if you don't get past verse 26. And many times God's people do not experience the extraordinary because of their carnal mindset. They are in a, again, we realize the Lord can intervene. He can change all that just like that. I understand that. But that's not the emphasis tonight. So if we're going to experience the spiritually extraordinary, and everybody in that boat had the same mindset. It's a spirit. It's a ghost. If you're going to get to verse 29, walking on water, that extraordinary experience, you've got to get past the mindset of all those around you. And that's the truth. And he did. How did he do that? Well, that brings us to number three. He must hear and recognize Jesus. You're not going to get past verse 26 if you do not hear him and you do not recognize him. In the midst of a storm, with a voice rising above the noise of the storm, and a voice rising above the panic and the hysteria of the voices coming from the boat, Jesus says, "It is I." He didn't just say, "It is I." They wouldn't have heard him. The waves are crashing, the wind is blowing. It's got to be a voice that rises above all of that. Everybody in the boat is screaming, "It's a ghost! It's a ghost!" So when Jesus said, "It is I," that no doubt was a booming voice, and it overpowered the sound of the wind and the waves, and it overpowered the panic and the hysteria that was going on in the boat. They all heard it, but they didn't all hear it the same way. Peter heard it differently than the others did. Now that voice came from the darkness. It was part of the reason they couldn't make out who it was. Only part. But that voice was very familiar to Peter. And he recognized that. I don't know that the others did. I don't know that they didn't, but I certainly don't know that they did. We know Peter did. He recognized that voice. And what do you think was the main thing that Peter heard? Do you think the main thing he heard was, "Be of good cheer? Be not afraid"? No, I think the main thing he heard was, "It is I. It is I." Because that's the reason you can be of good cheer. That is the reason you don't have to be afraid. It is I. That's like Jesus, that's the equivalent of Jesus saying, I am. So I believe that's what Peter heard. It may have been the only thing Peter heard. It is I. Fourthly, after hearing this, and I believe recognizing who it was, there was an overpowering desire within Peter to get near to Christ. Overpowering desire. Peter, upon seeing him, and I believe when the Lord said, it is I, that figure out there in the water no longer looked like a ghost to Peter. I believe he recognized who it was. Maybe he wasn't 100% certain because he needed some more assurance, but he had a pretty good idea. That's the Lord. So, in verse 28, Peter sees him walking on the water. He hears that voice that he had heard so many times before. And he said, Lord. Right there tells me he recognized who it was. Whether it be by sight or by the voice, really doesn't matter. Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come. Lord, I believe it's you. Just give me more assurance that it's you. And how did Jesus prove that it was him? Peter said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. Lord said, come. Come. So there's Peter. Basically stuck in the boat with the others. Just like the others, he's struggling to survive. Somehow get through that storm. God's people ought, it should not define our lives that we're just struggling to survive. You're missing it if that's your life. Just struggling to survive. Now realizing that that's the Lord out there. He has a desire to move beyond where he was. That boat. You'll never get to verse 29, walking on the water, without a desire to leave where you are. Therein lies the problem with many, many, many of God's people. They don't like where they are, but they're not about to leave where they are either. And what was it that gave Peter the desire to leave where he was? Jesus. Jesus is out there, and I want to be close to him. And I can't be close to him until I get out of this boat. So there's a desire, and it was an overpowering desire. So his mindset now is, never mind the boat. Never mind the wind. Never mind the water. Never mind everybody else in the boat. None of those things really matter to me right now. Jesus is out there. And I want to be near to him. That is Peter's overwhelming desire. That's how you get to extraordinary spiritual experiences. I want to be where he is. And without waiting for anyone else to say or do anything, without waiting for Thomas or anyone else on the boat to say, Peter, just sit down, be quiet, we'll get through this. He didn't wait to hear from anybody else. All he had to hear was, come. That was enough. That should be enough for all of God's people. What else do you need? So, Peter says, Lord, if that's you, just tell me to come. That is a passionate desire to be where Jesus was. You see, Peter wants more than what's in that boat. And if we're going to experience the spiritually extraordinary, we've got to want more than what we have. We've got to want more. And we've got to be willing to leave the boat. People's attitudes today is, well, this is all I know. This is what I've done all my life. I can't do it any differently. Well, then you'll stay there. And you won't experience the spiritually extraordinary. I believe everybody in that boat thought Peter had lost his mind when he stepped unto the water. He didn't just step into it, he stepped unto it. Because he's walking on it. It brings us to number five. There was faith moving him. And immediately, and Peter walked on the water to go to Jesus. That's his purpose. That'll always be our purpose. To go to Jesus. That ought to be our purpose in life. So Peter's come down out of ship. And when he did, he began a miraculous walk. But he had to get out of the boat, had to get past verse 26 before he stepped out of the boat and walked on the water. There was unquestioning when Jesus said, come. There was unquestioning, there was unhesitating obedience. The Christ invitation. And the reason is because he had faith, not that he could walk on the water, he had faith that's Jesus out there. And he said to come. And regardless of what the water's doing, he told me to come. And I believe. The Lord calls his people all the time. All the time. And the Lord's people, most of the time, well, if this circumstance works and this, if these 15 things line up, I will consider it. That's the attitude of most people. If these 15 things add up, then I'll know it's the Lord's will. I'm here to tell you, if nothing adds up and Jesus says, come, it's the Lord's will. Amen. Well, we... There's some, again, we've said this many times, there's some odd, it's just downright scary the way God's people, many of them, determine the Lord's will. Jesus says, come, that's all you need to know. Amen. There was a willingness to leave where he was. He begins to move in the direction of Christ. If you want to experience the extraordinary, you need to move in the direction of Christ. In order to do that, you've got to get past verse 26 again. The mere suppositions. So this wasn't just a wild venture without any foundation. It was inspired by the authority of the Lord. Come. He didn't say, Peter, you come, and if you take that first step, I'll allow you to walk on water. That's not what he said. He just said, Peter, come. Peter didn't even stop and think about it and say, well, how in the world am I going to get from here to there? He didn't need to know. All he needed to know is it was Jesus, and he said, come. That's faith. That's faith. Faith isn't 15 things working out. And you act because 15 things worked out. That's not faith. Faith is Jesus says, come, and you have no idea how you're going to get here to there. But he said, come, so I'm coming. That's faith. And that's what Peter had at this moment. So as Peter walked on water, he's going toward Jesus. That's always the case in an extraordinary spiritual experience. You're always moving toward Jesus. He's not inspired by pride. He's inspired simply by, that is Jesus. So he's moving in the direction of Christ, under the authority of Christ. And what's he focused upon? He's focused on Jesus. That's obvious because of the interruption. He's focused on Christ. And if you want an extraordinary experience, you must focus upon Christ. So there he is. He's got this extraordinary experience. But what happens next is a major interruption and a failure on Peter's part. Verse 29, again, ends with those wonderful words, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But then there's the opening word of verse 30. But. Introducing something that is in contrast to Peter walking on the water. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. What happened? He lost his focus. He turned his eyes from Jesus, seeing Jesus only, and now he sees the problem. And that's all he sees. And really what happens here is humanity gets in the way. We all know all about that. You can be having an extraordinary spiritual experience, but humanity is going to get in the way somewhere along the line. It's going to happen. It's not if, it's going to happen. Our humanity is going to get in the way of spirituality. It got in the way of his faith. And now he sees the angry sea. He sees the waves. He feels the wind. And his faith gives way to fear and panic. What happened to Peter was the storm was obvious. I mean, everybody could see the storm. But what happened was he became distracted by the obvious. Happens all the time. We become distracted by the obvious. We're not saying that the problem doesn't exist. Perhaps the problem is very obvious. Our problem is we get distracted by the obvious. And that's what happened to Peter. So suddenly his walking on water time became a sinking time. How many times have we experienced that? We're having an extraordinary personal spiritual experience, and then the next thing we know, we're sinking. We've all experienced that. Happens all the time. But notice what's important here, beginning to sink. Beginning to sink. So now instead of victory, he begins to be conquered by the storm. Anytime you and I begin to get conquered by our circumstances, whether it's good or bad, there's an interruption in the spiritually extraordinary. And that's what happened. Beginning to sink. He didn't sink all the way to the bottom. There's a reason he didn't. But beginning to sink. And that leads us to our last point. He gets past the interruption. He gets past the failure. There's always going to be, as long as we're in this life, there's always going to be interruptions in our spiritual life. And we're going to fail. It's going to happen. Something's going to happen to interrupt our spiritual experience. And we will fail. The problem is, that's where many live the rest of their lives. That's where they stay. There's been an interruption. Well, I haven't been to church in 15 years. I used to go every Sunday and every Wednesday. Every time the doors were open, you could depend on me being there. But 15 years ago, such and such happened. I haven't been back since. Do you realize what you just said? I'm not meaning you. There was an interruption in my life. And I never got over it. And really, if they're honest, what they're saying is that I don't intend to. And don't confuse me with the facts. I don't intend to get over this. But if you're going to get to verse 33, you've got to get past the interruptions and the failures. Because there's going to be interruptions. Circumstances will interrupt. People will interrupt. We will fail. Other people will fail. It's just a fact. But we've got to move past it. How do we do that? As soon as he began to sink, he cried out. And beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." He knew who it was that was right there. He knew it was Christ. He didn't wait till he was choking up seaweed to cry out, "Lord, save me." As soon as he began to sink, as soon as he felt himself going under, he cried, "Lord, save me." That's the way to get past the interruption. That's the way to get past the failure, whether it be failure on our part or failure on someone else's part. That's really not the issue. Beginning to sink, he cried. And he didn't cry out to, he didn't turn around and cry to the other disciples on the boat, "Thomas, help me! Andrew, help me! Matthew, help me! Lord, save me!" People have interruptions in their lives and they have failures and they call everyone else. Except the one that can't help them, the Lord. And everyone else gives them all kinds of advice. "Well, if I was you, I wouldn't go back there." And on it goes. "Well, so-and-so told me to do such-and-such." Well, first of all, you should cry out to the Lord. He's not going to tell you to do the wrong thing. So, beginning to sink. So what's he doing here? He's refocused upon Christ. And that's how you get past the interruption. We lose our focus. There's no one that can deny that. I lose my focus every single day. Somewhere along the line, I'm going to lose focus. Somewhere along the line, there's going to be an interruption. Somewhere along the line, I'm going to fail. Or someone else's failures will come into my life. It's going to happen. But as soon as I see that happening, I need to cry, "Lord, save me. Deliver me from this. Deliver me from sinking." And what happened? Jesus took hold of him. And immediately, Jesus stretched forth his hand. And caught him. That means he took hold of him. He had a firm grasp upon Peter. And don't tell me that Peter didn't feel that. He cried out to the Lord. And the Lord took hold of him. That's how you get past the interruptions. That's how you get past the failures. That's how you get to verse 33. Worshiping the Lord in the ordinary. He cried out. Verse 32, after he cried out, the Lord took hold of him. The extraordinary experience continued. Verse 32, and when they, Jesus and Peter, were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Now that's a beautiful picture. Jesus and Peter walking together. It all began with Peter stepping out of the boat, walking toward Jesus, but then there was an interruption. There was a failure. But Peter cried out unto the Lord. That's what we need to do. And as soon as he did, the Lord took hold of him. And the next thing we see, they're back. There's Peter back walking on the water with Jesus. Again, all of this is a manifestation and a reminder. You don't have to be stuck in the sinking time. You don't have to live there. And if you are, that is no one's fault but your own. I don't mean to be unsympathetic, but if you are stuck in a sinking time, that is your fault. I don't care what anyone else has done. It doesn't matter as far as your sinking time. If you're stuck there, it's your fault. Cry out to the Lord. Lord, save me. And oh, how wonderful it is. What an extraordinary experience it is when we feel the Lord grab hold. That's an extraordinary experience. And then we can resume the extraordinary by walking on the water with Him. And then we see, in closing, and when they were come into the ship, Jesus and Peter, all the others are in the ship. Just an ordinary ship. But something extraordinary has happened. Jesus is now in the ship. And all those apostles who were earlier crying, "It's a spirit, it's a spirit, it's a ghost," they fell down and worshiped the Lord. And I believe everything between verse 22 and verse 33 tells us how they got there. And that's an extraordinary experience when you can worship the Lord. Again, much of our life is lived in the realm of the normal. I'm glad it is, really. That which is common, that which is unremarkable. There's nothing remarkable about me going out into the garage, getting in the vehicle, starting it, and backing out of the garage. There's nothing remarkable about that. That's ordinary. But my point is, we can have extraordinary experiences and bring it into ordinary life. And what that does, it makes life extraordinary. So though we live in the ordinary, our life ought to be anything but mundane. Our lives ought to be extraordinary. And I believe we see a pattern here in Matthew chapter 14. I don't want to live, nor do you, the norm. I don't want to be normal. What is considered normal today is sick. I want to rise above that. And it all starts with getting past verse 26. Well, I think it's a spirit. I think it's such and such. Got to get past that. Till you come, I know that's the Lord. And He said, come. I don't need to know anything else. I just need to go toward Him. What a wonderful life. Again, don't be deceived. There's going to be interruptions. There's going to be failures. But the Bible tells us how to deal with those as well. Lord, save me. Lord, save me. Keep me from sinking. The very moment you feel sinking coming on, the very moment you feel depression, that very moment you need to cry out, Lord, save me. The thing to do is not to go in the bedroom, close the door, and get under the covers. That won't get you out. But Lord, save me. Don't let me sink. And he responds. And we move on to an extraordinary life. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.